First of all, just sort of a comment on the title of this presentation, Network Sculpture, was a title that Johannes gave to my presentation because I didn't actually give him a title. So I spent a lot of time thinking about this and trying to figure out, okay, what can I say about this that might be a little bit meaningful? So just for fun, I decided to look up the word network on Wikipedia, and I found the first part kind of interesting. Network and networking in their original and most literal sense are the weaving of thread, yarn, into textile nets and the weaving of ropes, wires, or cable into similar nets. So I'm not sure if you know this, but I have... I'm in the Paraflows exhibition right now, and I have this particular piece, Body Trichobotria, up. And, I can see the immediate connection, so I guess I am a bit relevant to this topic. But to continue, the use of electrical and electronic networks to affect communication between humans has led to further extension of the term to refer figuratively to any system designed or evolved of connection or communication between people or objects. And I think this is important for me because I've always looked at myself as a sculptor. My BFA was in sculpture, yet at this point I work a lot in installation. And I think the movement for me from sculpture to installation is an important movement because it went from sort of object as site for that you approach and you walk around and you explore, and it's something that is very object based. It's very hard to go beyond that as a viewer. So also with my sculptural practice, before I went to Montreal, I was really interested in sort of the abject body. I was interested in art and technology, how technology sort of mutates or can mutate the body. I was also interested in hybrid, as I continue to be interested in. But at that particular time, I was more thinking through the body in terms of sort of how technology can change it or modify it. I was reading Foucault at the time, and I was interested in the panopticon, and technology is something that was controlling. And as you can see from all these slides. So when I went to Montreal, this is an important point for me. I was introduced to certain philosophers like Deleuze and Guattari and Henri Bergson, and I started to stop looking at technology as oppositional to the body and started to sort of see the body as something that extends into its environment. And I think that this movement is symbolized in my movement from sculpture to installation, because installation sort of requires a bit more of movement. It requires the body moving through space. The body's size is challenged. We start to think of the body in terms of senses and what we can do to challenge sort of the viewer's sort of experience of time as well as narrative. So I started looking at this type of work as opposed to object as site of contemplation, and I started moving into a desire to build installation work. Artists like Jean-Pierre Gauthier, who makes these large network sort of based installations that have sound and sensors, started to really fascinate me. People like Tomoko Takahashi, sort of building this installation that's all about our experience of learning how to drive. Just sort of that moment that's temporal, it's that moment of utter chaos as you get behind the wheel for the very first time. And I found that installation has more of an ability to sort of touch on this sort of temporal experience as well as memory, etc. This is Ernesto Nesto. So I think I'll start with Body Trichobotria because it was sort of at the beginning for me of a very large shift. And it's important here to sort of explain that I work often with sculpture and with an installation. So the installation has a lot of technology, so I have a lot of research that I need to do in order to make it work, and I have to figure out how to make it work. So I often move to this sort of sculptural side, which explores the same concepts as the larger installation, but sort of takes it in a different approach. So, Body Trichobotria was based on, is a form of bob, first of all, it's a form of bobbin lace making. And I used, with bobbin lace, you can use any pattern that you want. I think historically, I just want to briefly mention that bobbin lace is a fantastic, it's like a non-linear form of weaving that women in Italy in the 16th century were able to, who were practitioners of, were able to actually have complete autonomy. They didn't have to marry because they were able to support their own lives based on their bobbin lace practice. But contemporary bobbin lace, people are using all sorts of patterns. So for me, what I ended up using was the neural network as a pattern. Now, at this particular time, I was thinking through the body as something that extends into its environment, something that's constantly changing and shifting. So I was really focusing on the somatic sensory system as a way of thinking through the body. So I just want to briefly sort of flip through some slides here, showing you different ways, or the way that I actually built this body. So I wove along the mannequin's form, and then I eventually removed it. At the time, I was reading stuff like this quote here, or this poem by John Davies. Much like a subtle spider which doth sit in middle of her web, which spreadeth wide, if aught do touch the utmost thread of it, she feels it instantly on every side. So this particular piece was making a comparison between the body, the sensory system, and the spider's web. And the word trichobotria itself is the actual hair on a spider's leg, which allows it to sense its web. Sort of talking about this body that extends into its environment and is affected by everything that it walks into its environment, and sort of relating the space between the body and the walls as a very active space where the body of the viewer is constantly changing. So this is a studio view. So at this particular time, I was also working on peripheral response. So I'm just going to show you a little video.
Peripheral response is a responsive installation that uses the cutaneous sensory system as a launching point for an exploration into how the body relates to its environment. The elements in the installation are informed by medical textbook illustrations of the body's sensory receptors, which combined create our sense of touch. This installation uses Pure Data, the open source version of MaxMSP, to govern behavior. Each sculptural receptor contains an infrared and sonar in order to allow the objects to know the viewer's location and to respond. When the participant completes the circuit of information exchange, the elements respond, creating a relationship with the viewer that audibly follows them as they move through the room. As one moves through the space, the ripple effect caused by their presence calms and the installation settles.
Another major point, or sort of a point of departure for me, is an interest in reinterpretation. I'm not interested really in being illustrative of an idea or a scientific principle or anything like that. It was more an interest in sort of playing with how we try to understand parts of the body in Western science. So here, for example, you have the Pacinian corpuscle, and you know we study it and we pull it aside, and we know that you know each of these rings here deform once somebody touches the skin, and so that we know that there's pressure. And so this is how we understand the Pacinian corpuscle, or nerve endings. We know that it has something to do with hot and cold, but we're not exactly sure how they function. And it's sort of that not knowing that really interests me, and sort of how can I create some sort of poetic installation space, and perhaps not really offer an alternative way of thinking about it, but just sort of thinking about it in a different way, I guess maybe so. Anyway, so each of these objects are based on these medical drawings. This is all the sensors that make up the somatic system. And so each object, or sensor, as I'm calling them, has a tap from a tap shoe in it. And so they tap the floor, sort of mimicking, articulate robotically, mimicking human, or mimicking Morse code. They all have infrared as well as sonar, and so I'm able to track the viewer and make the installation respond to the viewer. And as a logic, I didn't hold on to this as a strong logic, but as the departure point for the logic in Pure Data, I use the sensors, how they sense within the body. So you can see here in the Meissner corpuscle, or versus the Pacinian, that the Meissner is a more of a localized sort of sense, whereas the Pacinian is lower in the skin, and so it has more of a broad way of sensing stimuli. And then as a way of programming within Pure Data, for example, the Meissner corpuscle, it fires at the beginning of the stimuli as well as at the end of the stimuli, whereas the Merkel cells actually are constantly firing throughout the duration of the stimuli. So I use this logic in programming peripheral response. And every time that I exhibit this work, this is an exhibition in Montreal called Corps Habité, which was curated by Group Molior in Montreal. And I also, if in the video, you'll notice that I used the same weaving technique on the floor as I did with Body Trichobotria. And this particular piece, I moved it further up into the wall because I was interested in sort of thinking about sort of the flesh in relationship to the building, and sort of drawing parallels between sort of the electrical system in the building and the electrical systems within our body. So, right. So another area of interest for me is hybridity. You can see it in all of my earlier works as well. And I'm interested in sort of the interaction between, I guess, the natural forms and technology. I'm interested, and you can see it all the time in just in nature in itself, in terms of wind and erosion, and not necessarily hybridity, but sort of how new expressions and how new forms are being created all the time based on sort of interactions of forces. And I think hybridity is a natural way of looking at it. So here we have the tree root sort of growing around the wall, still fully functional as a tree and the wall, yet it's just a newer sort of visual experience. And you can see this in the work of David McMillan, who he's gone to Chernobyl, and he sort of photographed sort of this crazy growth spurt that nature's had after the disaster. But then there's other artists like Bejayel who are sort of taking aspects of one part of life and sort of superimposing it onto another. And I'm really interested in this sort of work. I'm interested in the prosthetic. I often use the prosthetic as a metaphor for the interaction between the body and technology. I'm not denying sort of the negative aspects of this sort of collaboration, but I'm thinking more in terms of balance, and if we can achieve balance, sort of these new expressions that are coming quite naturally. So I'll just show you a little video for the plant iPod installation. Actually, I think I have to start it, which will introduce sort of this next series of work.
Thank you. joie l'entendait aussi. Un soir, pendant la prière, il grimpa la colline de la
The plant iPod installation is comprised of 8 responsive objects that house embedded houseplants. Each of the sculptural objects include a built-in sound system and sensors, so that the sounds being played to the plants are directly affected by the viewer's location and proximity. The sound component has 2 modes. In the rest mode, the speakers play sound files of different types of breathing, which fills the space with a collective breath. The original breathing files were convolved with general noise files in order to create a sound that alludes to the breath of the storyteller, as well as the new role of the technological components. The active mode consists of recorded stories and cultural tales about trees that are told in multiple languages.
So, with the plant iPod installation, there was a number of sort of factors that I thought through before beginning this particular piece. I wanted to play with the idea that plants grow better if you speak to them or you talk to them or whatever. I thought that was a really nice metaphor. It's a really nice idea. It's something that I think it's more nature, or we coexist better, I suppose, if we're slightly aware of the other. And so in this particular piece, I was interested in sort of subverting that relationship and having creating a different relationship between technology and natural forms. And I wanted to sort of create a caring and loving sort of relationship between these objects and the plants. But before I began this installation, I had to decide on a materiality, and I ended up deciding on cork. And I'm going to give a brief little history on cork, because it's actually a really interesting material. It's a renewable resource, as we know, but it's also something that there's like this big myth around the idea that cork is actually disappearing, whereas right now there's actually more than enough cork in the world. But it's all based on a revolution that had happened in Portugal, which holds 59% of the world's cork supply. And what ended up happening is, during this revolution, the forests were handed over to farmers who didn't know how to actually harvest the cork. So for about a decade and a half, there was a problem, but now there's more than enough cork. And it's interesting because it's the petroleum industry that's trying to continue with this idea that we're running out of cork. But in fact, there's more than enough cork in the world right now. So I wanted to use it for this sort of one of the main... Also, it's home to 7 indigenous species that are on the endangered species list. So it's really important that we actually continue using cork. So I was very happy to use cork for this particular project. But I was also interested in using cork for its flexibility. It's just an amazing material in general. As a physical form, I wanted to use pollarding and coppicing, which is a form of pruning that promotes new growth. So I wanted to use a form that, like a lot of trees in France are pollarded. It's like these very large limbs with a bunch of little branches coming off the top. That's a form of pollarding. So everything in the project was really about sort of this idea of interaction with nature and trying to find balance, trying to help each other. And of course, the stories all came from a time, came from cultures that have a different relationship that Occidental culture has with nature. So a lot of the stories are, for example, sort of the magic orange tree, or the story about... this family whose child was horrible, and they took their baby into the forest and threw it away, and then the baby found a magic seed, and the seed grew into a tree that took care of the baby, and then the parents felt guilty and went back to the forest to find the baby, and then the tree made them promise to treat the baby with love, even if it acts badly. So, and a lot of the stories are about sort of learning from nature and going to nature to learn about how to become a better human, I guess. So while I was doing the plant iPod installation, I started the branch prosthetic project. Now this project was just a material investigation. And the idea was I'd find a the idea started just as a material investigation. It then grew into something a whole lot more. So this quote I found, I absolutely love it. The word stump, a word that refers to both the body that is maimed and the prosthetic that replaces it. The stump of a limb is replaced by a wooden leg, also referred to as a stump. The cut down root of a tree is a stump, and by analogy, the limb that is removed from the body is also a stump. The human game is a stump from the stump created in the tree. So then this project really became about restoring unity to nature and sort of using the logic of the prosthetic, but reverse. So here's the branch connected to the tree. It doesn't work, obviously. This was just the prototype because the branches go up and this one goes down. But this is sort of the beginning of this whole project. So that's sort of a side project. But to go back to the plant iPod installation, I completed this piece. This is the exhibition at the Nuit Blanche in Toronto. What can I say about this piece? I guess to talk about, I wanted everything to be a sort of a hybrid. Everything was meant to be a hybrid sort of experience. So even down to the sound, the breathing patterns were convolved, and convolving sounds is a sort of a mathematical equation where you take two different sounds to create a new sort of hybrid sound. And so what I ended up taking was the sounds of technology, and I layered them and layered them and layered them until I created a white noise, sort of a noise file. And then I convolved it with my storyteller's breathing patterns. So you had this sort of technological breathing pattern, but it was weird because it stopped being technology. It was kind of like breath, but it was more like water in a strange way. And so each individual plant had their own breathing pattern, and then as you would approach the plant, it would gently drift into a different story. And I had a different story for each different plant, and every story was told in multiple languages. And so this one was in, I also showed it in Montreal, and so I'd had Portuguese and French and English and Spanish. And I'm going to be showing it in Winnipeg very soon, and I plan on having some German stories and some Mandarin stories I'm going to be adding to this. So it'll be it's going to have as many stories in multiple languages as possible. And what ends up happening is that the viewer starts to create a different relationship with the plant and starts to lean in and starts to sort of have this experience of listening to the story. And I mean, there was little girls at the exhibition who were hanging out with one plant for the whole duration of the story and then running to the next plant. And it was really interesting to see that sort of relationship start. So to get back to the branch prosthetic project, I then went to the Vermont Studio Center and I started building this prosthetic. Now, what I did with this project now that I knew that I wanted to repair or restore unity to trees, I talked to a friend of mine who is a zipline installation and operation expert. So ziplines are, the big airplane cables in the trees, and you hook up a pulley and you have a harness and you fly through the trees 40 feet in the air or whatever. So he showed me how to attach these to trees without actually damaging the tree. And ultimately, these can now stay on the tree for as long as they want. And eventually, the tree will absorb the prosthetic, and the tree won't be hurt. This one's been on my tree in my backyard for about a year and a half now. And I got to loosen it every year, but it's clearly growing around it. It's very interesting. So this last January, 2010, I went to France and I did a residency at CAMAC at Marnay-sur-Seine, which is about an hour away from Paris. And I decided to combine the technology from the plant iPod installation and to insert it into one of these branches. So I used I have a sound system in here, and it's run on solar panels. Now, for this particular piece, just because it was a one-off, I didn't come up with anything that was very, very complex in terms of programming. In fact, what I ended up doing was I just created a patch in Pure Data where I was able to modify a bunch of my sounds to create sound files. So I built my own wave player. It's kind of like an iPod, but it was triggered by a 5-volt high, 0-volt off sort of thing. And I made a number of sound files that were what I call sonic portraits. I'm not sure how successful it was. I think I liked it in a lot of ways. I recorded ambient sounds in the actual garden, as well as I recorded sounds from the other residents, and I created these sort of sonic portraits, I guess. I'm just trying to think of what I can say. Oh yeah, Kamek is an interesting place because Kamek was owned by Frank Tenois, and a lot of the big greats in the jazz community went to this place and recorded music. So we're talking about Duke Ellington and Ella Fitzgerald, and it had this amazing history of jazz. And you know, you'd find rooms with hot tubs, and it was clear that, you know, in this place people had a lot of fun. And so, of course, I did some sound files on the history of the place. So I'll just play you the little video that I have about Branch Prosthetic at Kamek. Well, just this church bell is really quite something special. There's the church right next to Kamek, and every hour and every half hour it would ring in the hour and half hour. It was just this weird sort of auditory way of understanding time and the passage of time. And as you can tell, it was the middle of nowhere, so this bell became like this huge thing for all the residents. There was a lot of swans and all sorts of amazing sounds, which I then constructed into these different sound files. Also, there was this crazy power plant, a nuclear power plant, and every Thursday it would ring in the day once a week, and it was just really intense. So so that was this piece. Let me just go to the next. So yeah, these are the speakers, and you can see the little sensors here and here. It wasn't very loud, but yeah. Oh, there's the video. Okay. So I guess all of that is to say that here I am in Vienna, and I'm here to do a residency until the end of October, and I've decided that what I'd like to do is I want to build a technological system here, which will be for a future project, which I'm entitling Foresta Inclusive. The Latin roots of the word foresta meaning outside, being outside of civilization, and what I'm interested in doing is creating a large system that fits onto all these different trees. Now, of course, this is just something I made in SketchUp, just to briefly explain what I want to do. But I'll be finding trees in a forest, and I will be prostheticizing all of the trees to create this type of thing. There should be about 10 of them. There'll be a bunch of microphones and speakers, as well as a variety of sensors. And so what's going to end up happening is that I'll be recording randomly all these different sort of sound experiences within the forest. Now, at the same time, this piece will then be displaced into a gallery. I haven't quite figured out how I'll do it. I'll probably take casts of the trees and in Forton recreate the forest within the gallery space. But what will happen is this will also be solar powered, and I want to create a database of memory, sort of a memory of this forest and everything that happens within this space. I'll probably end up using microphones as sensors, so if a certain hertz range gets triggered, then it's going to start recording for about a minute. And then I'll be working with a sound artist. His name is Michal Seta, and he'll be coming here in the last 2 weeks of October to sort of work on the sound component of this work. So obviously I'm not going to be doing the prosthetics and all this work in at the residency. So I'm working with these other forms, these mouths that I built a while back. They're made out of clear casting resin. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to suspend maybe 30 or 40 of these mouths from the ceiling to create sort of a cloud of clear casted mouths. And all of the mouths, well, not all of them, but some of them will contain sensors, some of them will contain microphones, some of them will contain little headset speakers. So as you pass beneath this cloud of mouths, you will be recorded, as well as people who were recorded in the past will be played back to you to create sort of a choreographed sound sort of experience. We're not quite sure how it's going to work. We're going to start the programming for the last 2 weeks. So my job right now is to busily build all my microphones and to create this actual system. And then when Michal gets here, we're actually going to discover how the programming is going to work. But yeah, that's it for my talk for today. Thank you.
Okay. So, any questions or comments?
So I saw you had the sculptures based on like drawings of nerves and the nervous system.
Yes.
Have you ever thought of doing sculptures based on like old obsolete theories of like what the nervous system was like?
I think in a lot of ways my installation was sort of an old obsolete way of thinking about it. But no, it's a really good idea. But I mean, that's really what it was about, was just sort of reinterpretation, creating a poetry, and that would have been a nice way of doing it, for certain.
Yeah. Today, so like,
everyone's tired.
Lazy audience. Okay, so my question would be, there's this whole discussion about bio art and actually really combining technology and biological like research mm-hmm. and going in this direction. Have you ever thought about doing something like that?
Well, yeah, actually it was the very beginning when I started considering this. I did a lot of research into bio art, and I know 100% certain that I wasn't interested in doing that. I'm not interested in manipulating nature to create a new expression. I was really interested in something that was maybe more collaborative or something that was a bit more poetic. And it wasn't about, certainly putting the prosthetic on the tree and eventually the tree will grow around it, I guess, does manipulate to a certain extent. But that wasn't the point of what I was trying to do. Yeah.
I have a question concerning the branch prosthetic project.
Yes.
Could you, I found it very interesting, but I didn't completely understood how what the sensors are doing and how it connects to the sound that you're recording on. There are microphones, the loudspeakers.
Right.
And what are the sensors doing then?
Well, the sensors was just an on-off switch because I was running the piece with solar panels. I had to be really careful with how much power I was draining, so I just used them as like toggles, really, like to turn, like it basically, someone's there, a sound
okay.
is triggered.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So it's going to be the same for what you're planning with the cloud of...
Yeah, no, this one, I actually plan on getting a fairly large, like probably 100-watt panel, and... I mean, I obviously have to be careful. It's going to be hard to generate enough power to run a computer the whole time. But no, the sensors that I'll be using in Foresta Inclusive will be all sorts. I can't use infrared, although I tried outdoors. It's not a good idea. So I do. I can probably do some sort of sonar. So I can definitely figure out if there's someone there, if there's someone is not there. But I also want to use sensors that are based on sound, so that, you know, for example, if an owl hoots, it hoots, then it's immediately triggered to start recording, because the idea is to create or to record sound events in nature. So I got to come up with some way of doing it. So this winter we're actually going to create some sensor boxes and install them outside and see what we can do to get good natural noises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Have you ever used the plants themselves as sensors?
No. There's been a few artists who've done some really interesting work with plants. There's one group called, they did an exhibition called Slow Life. It was in the early aughts, and they actually recorded the growth patterns of plants, and then used that to make sound. And they did all sorts of work around sort of, and there's a lot of artists that have used sort of plants as an interface. I guess for that particular one, I was really just interested in something a little bit different.
Yeah. There is a follow-up.
Another question. Have you read The Secret Life of Plants?
The which one?
The Secret Life of Plants. Do you know the Baxter experiments?
Yeah,
and all that?
Years ago. Yeah.
They use plants as heat. They use plants as sensors.
Yeah. What is that? The theremin? There's one artist that had these inserted in plants, and then you could make music by interacting with the plant. There was another artist who did that as well.
There's a guy from San Francisco, Jonathan, and because we're also hosting this conference in San Francisco about sex and technology, and he was creating a plant porn installation. So he was doing research about how you could stimulate plant growth.
Okay.
And what would plant porn be? So if you project certain sounds or certain images onto plants, how can you stimulate the growth and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Two questions. To the last point, my first question relies, I'm not sure how to express it in English. There is a technology in agriculture to change wild plants into more dressed up plants, roses and apple trees. You put a branch of an advanced plant like this prosthetic.
Okay, so splicing.
Yeah. Do
together?
You rely on this, or have you thought of this? Because this is a very ancient technology.
Yeah, there's actually some really beautiful work being done with that, and I think that. It's connected to the bio art thing, where I wasn't interested in modifying. It was more the symbolic value of the prosthetic that I was interested in, and it was more the poetry. I didn't want to actually change anything. I wanted to just sort of play with the idea that technology could play a different role with natural forms. I wanted to subvert the traditional hierarchy that sort of places us on top and everything below. I wanted to just sort of play with it on a poetic level, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I understand, but her idea is to make the plant to do something, to stress it to do something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the idea. As a question, you rely on the ideas of Deleuze-Guattari. Do you also rely on the ideas of Joseph Beuys?
Not so much. I haven't really responded too much to Joseph Beuys, but it was Deleuze and Guattari, Merleau-Ponty, phenomenology, this sort of stuff came to me at a time when I was looking for something else in my work. And I responded to it really strongly. Like, it just sort of made sense for me. But I respond to Joseph Beuys in the same way, I guess, that I respond to a lot of art history, which is, it informs, obviously, what I do. But I brought up Deleuze and Guattari and that sort of stuff because it was a really sharp moment for me. It really changed sort of how I approached thinking about art and the body of the viewer, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, especially Guattari and Deleuze, who even use like the wasp and the orchid and all that stuff as like specific like philosophical concepts, mm-hmm. In Mille Plateaux. Okay.